The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Good morning, it's the Glenn Beck Program. My name is Mike Broomhead from Phoenix, Arizona. In for Glenn, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday this week. Thanks for being a part of the show. We have got a lot going on in the world. We've got to talk about the London terror attacks that happened. People dead on the London Bridge, just mowed down by cars. Three men get out with knives and begin stabbing. It took eight minutes for them to gun down these people. They know who they are. They have not released the names yet. Hopefully during the show, they will. We'll get their names out there as soon as they do. And the identities, they do know who they are. They've not yet released the names. So we'll talk in great lengths about this. Seven dead, 48 wounded in this attack. The death toll rises during the holy month of Ramadan. And that, to me, is more telling than anything else. That if you are, I don't know what religion you are, what faith you are, but any religion that you believe says that God wants you to kill people during a holy month, you are warping that religion. I don't know enough about Islam to defend it. I'm not an apologist for Islam. I just wonder that with the over billion Muslims in the world, to see the extremism and to see the extremists at what they're doing, today, more than ever, I think the tides are beginning to turn in the people and the people's minds, because we are seeing a change in the way people want to deal with this. President Trump had very harsh words for what happened in London and for the way it was handled by the mayor. And we've got a couple of things that we'll talk about. In the first hour will be the details of what we know, who they are, the reactions, the heroes, the victims, of course. In the second hour of the show, we'll talk about the media's reaction. The media's reaction to the attacks themselves, the media's reaction to the president's response to what happened. All of that will be a part of what we do in the show. And then, of course, the death toll during the holy month of Ramadan. We also have got to talk about the continuing saga of Kathy Griffin. Now Hollywood elites have begun to defend her. I'm just amazed that they seem to have the hold on the politically correct. So they are the arbiters of what hate speech is, how we address people according to their race, how we address people according to their gender. Do we use even gender pronouns? Should we just be non-gender specific? All of these things that make them politically correct in the things that we say. And yet there are people making excuses for what was done. Right is right, wrong is wrong. I don't think that Kathy Griffin should have been arrested, but what she did, she deserved the consequences that she got. But now Alec Baldwin, Jamie Foxx, Jim Carrey have come out defending her. This is a big part of the ends justifies the means society we live in. This is a popularity contest. I've said often, it's almost as if we have the mentality of a 12-year-old girl. If you've got girls, and I do, you know, when they're young, they have the best friend. They either love you or they hate you. There is no middle ground. One day, how is your friend? Oh, I hate her. I thought that was your best friend. She used to be, but now there's no in between. And we have this now in the world we live in. If you like somebody, they can't do anything wrong. And if you don't like somebody, they can't do anything right. And we're living in a world now, unfortunately, where American politics falls into the same trap. President Trump is never going to do anything right in the eyes of some. And unfortunately, though, he will never do anything wrong in the eyes of others. But the media has turned me into largely a Trump defender. Not my first choice for president. I've said this before, and I want him to be successful. I want him to be a great leader. I want him to do great things. But to be honest, his foreign policy so far has been terrific. His trip to the Middle East and then into Europe, to the Vatican, and then on to the NATO summit. I thought he did a great job. It was a great trip for this president. And there's not a person in the media that will give him credit for that. And I think that shows you their lack of credibility, because their criticism would be heard by a lot more people if it wasn't constant all the time. And there's areas that can be critical of anyone. And we've got to be honest about it. the intellectual honesty part of it falls in so many categories. Some of them, the Bill Maher situation. Bill Maher uses the N-word on his HBO special, and he's being defended by people that normally, if it had been anybody else, if I use that word ever, they would, I would be fired. I would be fired from my local job. I'd never be invited back here again. It would be the end of my career. Bill Maher, because of who he is, there's defenders of him on the left because people like him. It's, again, it's a popularity contest. Well, James Comey. James Comey is getting ready to testify. And James Comey, we'll talk about this later in the show. There are leaders on the left that say, there's a lot of smoke, but we don't have a smoking gun yet. We still don't have that smoking gun. Well, if you don't have a smoking gun, you have nothing. How many months of this investigation have been going on? Comey's going to testify this week. And then Hillary Clinton is being investigated. Well, you want to talk about where there is smoke and where there is evidence. Look at the laundry list. It's so interesting that James Comey is going to testify about being pressured or whether he felt pressured by the president to end an investigation, which he did not end. And yet he's the one that stood out there with a laundry list of crimes that he said that Hillary Clinton did commit. Well, just because she wasn't convicted, everybody said, you can't hold that against her. There hasn't even been a charge leveled against the president. So the media has turned me into a defender of this president. I'm critical at times. The people that listen to my show in Arizona at times get a little bit upset with me that are the diehard Donald Trump supporters. I just want him to be successful, but I'm going to call it like I see it, and I want to be intellectually honest. That doesn't mean if somebody that I really admire or somebody who is on my side of the aisle, I like saying they've done the wrong thing, but you've got to do it in order to be honest. And we live in a day where it's all about a popularity contest, and it's amazing to me to see what people are up to and how they're able to do this and get away with it. You know, in their own mind, how they have in with good conscience can say that Hillary Clinton is innocent. Well, Hillary Clinton's not innocent. Speaking of which, I'll give you an example. John Kerry on Sunday compared President Trump pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord with O.J. Simpson's murder case. He said that President Trump saying what he did was like O.J. Simpson saying he was going to go out and find the real killer. Can you imagine under any circumstances that someone in the Republican Party, an elected official, a senator, well, he's, you know, a former senator, former secretary of state, former presidential candidate, pick one of those, John McCain, pick any one of them, Lindsey Graham. If any one of them had ever compared President Obama to O.J. Simpson, what would have happened to their career? How they would have been hammered by the politically correct in the media. My focus has been and will be, I think, in large part, this next 4 years or 3.5 years now of this presidency, focusing on the media, because you think you're getting accurate coverage of things, and I can promise you, you're getting a jaded view. And when that happens, that's fine. I'm an opinion person. My job is to give my opinion. But I tell you that up front. I come with my biases. I'm not sitting here telling you this is unfiltered news. We report, you decide. This is me telling you my opinion on the news. And you get more of that than you can ever realize. And now more than ever, it's important that we understand who we're dealing with, how we're dealing with them, what should be done, and when it's wrong, fix it. The reaction from Great Britain and the United States to the attacks are almost two very, very different things. Coming up in a few moments, we'll talk about the London attacks and what we know and who these guys are for what we know. They've been reported. At least one of these attackers has been known to the police for quite a while, which is, again, the same thing we knew about the Manchester bomber. But also, London police tweeted out how to fight terrorism. And it seems so counterintuitive to an American for what they're saying you should do. And America has, you know, some Americans have responded. Is it time for the citizens to be able to defend themselves? And there are a lot of people in Great Britain asking that question right now. America, it's different. Our Second Amendment is for different purposes, but we do have a right to self-protection. So we'll talk about that here in hour number one. And of course, the Kathy Griffin saga continues as the president's son defends his family and lashes out at Kathy Griffin, but how the Hollywood elites are defending her. If you're a social media user on Twitter, I'm at Broomhead Show. I would love for you to follow me. Great interaction. I'll be answering tweets throughout the show. It's kind of the way I love to interact with people. So I'm a big social media user as well. So we'll be back in a few moments talking about the London Bridge attacks and what we know now about these men that carried out the attacks and the dead that they've left behind. We'll be back in a moment. My name is Mike Broomhead, and this is the Glenn Beck Program.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BECK.
All right, thanks for being here. It is the Glenn Beck Program, and we've got a lot to talk about. The London attackers, the attack began at about 10:08 time in London, 10:08 p.m., 5:08 Eastern Standard Time, and we learned more about the men that meted out this attack, that delivered these attacks. Police say the three attackers were shot dead within 8 minutes of the initial attack, which may seem fairly quick, but I wonder how long that would take American police. Remember the Charlie Hebdo shootings and the pictures. One of the most startling pictures to me was watching a police car reverse away from somebody with a gun because these were unarmed police officers. And that seems so strange in America. We fight over gun control, and I don't want to make this about gun control or the Second Amendment here in the United States. It's too easy of a conversation. We should be focused on how we're fighting terrorism. But at a time in this world where there are people that are just running people over on a bridge, how many times do we have to see this? You know, the Champs-Élysées in Paris, how many times we saw it in that Christmas market in Germany. We're watching people now finding new ways to do that. Even here in Ohio, at Ohio State University, that guy that ran people over and then jumped out with knives. They have a new MO because they can quick hit. They don't have to have guns that they're sneaking around. It's not about bombs. They're just able to jump in a vehicle and start running people over. But the unarmed police officers are what I don't understand, and the unarmed citizenry. I've mentioned many times before when I've been on this show that I come from a law enforcement family. My brother is a police lieutenant with the sheriff's office in my hometown in Florida, and he does a fantastic job, and it's a difficult job. And when he was early in his career, he was working midnights, and I remember riding along with him and pulling cars over. Imagine in the middle of the night, your backup is miles and miles away, and you approach a strange car. You don't know what you're going to find. You don't know who you're going to find. You don't know what you're going to encounter. But that's just a part of the dangers of being a police officer. But now as being a public servant, now your job is to protect the public. The citizens aren't armed. Let's just consider everybody innocent. They're not armed. They can't protect themselves. And now you've got police officers that can't protect them in this day and age. The reaction from the prime minister said that enough is enough. But when pushed a little further on what to do, they were going to just, let's control the internet. It's the way that they're radicalizing. No, let's eradicate the bad behavior. I know it sounds harsh. I'm not bloodthirsty. I don't wish war, but we're at war. There are people that hate our way of life. They don't care about who you are or who I am, who we are as people. They don't like the Western way of life. They've taken a religious book that they say tells them to murder anybody that doesn't agree with them. And I don't know how anybody thinks we're going to reason with that. One of the attackers here, it says one of the three attackers had been reported to the anti-terror police on at least two occasions. A former friend of the terrorist who was shot dead by the police, along with two accomplices, claimed he had been radicalized while watching YouTube videos and said he contacted the authorities after becoming concerned over his friend's extremist views. The funny thing about this, the reaction is, of course, going to be, we've got to control the internet. We've got to restrict what people can see. I'll be honest, I don't play violent video games. It's not my thing. But you can't blame it on bad. You can't blame bad behavior on that because millions of people play video games and it doesn't affect them. I can watch a YouTube video, and when it gets to be that extremely violent or the views are extremist one way or the other, I'll just change it or go watch something else. It's not going to affect me. These people are affected because they want to be affected. This is what they're drawn to. In many cases with the mass shootings we've seen, it's mental illness. And not all mental illness leads to violence, but there are people that are mentally ill to the point that they're a danger to themselves or other people. So you can't hold YouTube accountable. So we're going to restrict what people watch because some of the people watching are going to become violent because of it. It makes absolutely no sense. And what you're doing is curing what you think is a problem, and it's not even a symptom of the problem. It's gun control, but now it's what you view. It's internet control. What's next? I mean, we've got gun laws in this country, and yet the most violent city that we know of is Chicago. Not all of Chicago is violent, by the way. Most of Chicago is a great place to live. But they have so many murders, they keep setting records, and the most restrictive gun laws in the country. Where I live, we have the least restrictive in the country. In Arizona, you can carry a firearm legally and conceal it if you own it legally. You don't have to have a permit to carry a concealed weapon where I live. Streets are safe, no more dangerous than any other place. And it's, they say, an armed society is a polite society. Well, with that same mindset, what's available to us at the internet is an amazing thing. The things that you and I can find online, what we can learn on our own, where we're not relying on somebody else's opinion and them calling it a fact. The days of the network television news telling you and I what the truth is over. We, you know, Dan Rather was exposed as biased. So is Katie Couric, has been exposed as being very biased in their reporting. I have no problem with the bias if you just acknowledge it. I am very fiscally conservative. I'm more of a libertarian when it comes to social issues. I don't believe the government has a right to be in your bedroom. I don't care what's in your nightstand. It's none of my business. But I'll come to you from the beginning and say, this is how I feel about this topic. This is what we should be doing. What ends up happening, and if you saw the reports that CNN staged those protesters as kind of a pro-Muslim, I've got no problem with moderate Muslims being thanked when they stand up against what's happening. But it's going to have to be that way. It's going to have to be where the Muslim community starts outing some of the people that are radicalized because it's damaging the reputation of everybody in that faith. It doesn't make any sense to me at all to do things the way that we're doing them. In America, we have a right to self-protection, you know, the Second Amendment to keep and bear arms. And for the most part, the people that I know are law-abiding citizens and want nothing to do with hurting anybody. I have owned a handgun most of my adult life. I have never brandished a weapon on a human being, nor do I ever want to. But I don't ever want to find myself alone or with people I love where I can't defend them or defend myself. It's just a matter of self-defense. And to look at what happened in these attacks and to realize that, A, they use an automobile again. So now how do you defend against that? Are we going to outlaw cars? Are we going to stop people from driving in certain parts of town? So that's not a solution. And then once these guys got out of the vehicle, how long it took somebody that was armed to stop them and some of the heroic deeds of police officers. There was one cop that took on these guys with a baton. Can you imagine a police officer having to do that in America, on the streets of America? And at some point, you're going to have to start getting serious about how you vet people coming into your country. It's not a bad thing to say we want good people here. We're going to do our best to keep bad people out. And at what point do we say we are going to fight fire with fire? You will now be seeing armed police officers on the streets of London. And if you do something that's out of line, you will be shot. And that to me is nothing more than self-preservation. There is something to be said for self-preservation and sending a message to the terrorists. When you send them that message, they're going to react one way or the other. And maybe then you don't get people as radicalized. You don't get somebody watching a YouTube video that thinks that this is a good idea. When they realize that it means nothing but death, there is no glory, there is no honor in murdering innocent people. And what are we doing to send that message? So what we'll do in a moment is we're going to talk about the London police, their reaction. Now, we keep saying, hearing them say enough is enough. We're going to defeat terrorism. What the London police tweeted out to its citizens on how to fight terrorism. It is so not anti-American. It's so foreign to our thinking. It's an interesting read. We'll talk about that coming up here in a few minutes. Again, my name is Mike Broomhead. I'm in until Wednesday. So thanks for being a part of the show. I'll be back in a few moments.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Okay, how do they react in London? In London, how did they react to the terrorist attack? The police are telling citizens how to protect themselves. And it is so different than what we might, I shouldn't say how we would do it in America, how you would see it in a lot of places in America. An unarmed citizenry. It's been years now, all cartridge firearms are illegal in the UK for the citizens to have, which they think makes for a more peaceful society, until you have people that don't care about those laws. And instead of making this necessarily about our Second Amendment, let's just talk about what they've done. The 3 points from the London police are run, hide, and tell. Run, they say run to safety because it's better option than surrendering or negotiating. Well, yeah, that makes sense. I'm not negotiating with somebody trying to stab me. Then they say hide. Go somewhere, turn your cell phone ringer off, make sure it's off, vibrate, whatever, so that they can't hear you while you're hiding. And then when you can, call police and alert them to what's going on. These three people that ran all these people down then got out of the vehicle and went into a marketplace with knives and just began stabbing in unarmed citizenry. How long would that last in the streets of the city you live in, depending on what city you live in? How long would it be in America before they encounter an armed citizen? I had the privilege in my home state of being the MC for our Department of Public Safety or our Highway Patrol's Trooper of the Year ceremonies, and where they were awarding citizens and officers, troopers, for their heroism and duty. And one of them was a man, you probably heard the national story, where a trooper was ambushed by a suspect at a traffic accident. It was a horrible traffic accident, a rollover accident. A girl was very severely injured in the crash with her boyfriend. So he went to the aid of the girlfriend, and when doing so, the boyfriend attacked the state trooper and shot him in his shoulder where he couldn't reach his firearm. And he began then to beat the trooper with his gun. And this trooper was going to die. And a man driving by saw what happened, asked the trooper if he needed help. The trooper said yes. He pulled a firearm, told the guy to stop. The guy refused, and he shot and killed the perpetrator and saved the life of a state trooper, an armed citizen. Happened in my hometown a few weeks after that. Same situation. A deputy on the side of the road gets into a fist fight and is being killed by a suspect. An armed citizen stopped the threat. At what point do we look at the London police and say, how seriously are you taking these attacks when you are telling people to run and hide? You want to talk about propaganda? What do you think the ISIS propaganda is going to be when on one hand they're cheering the fact that 48 people are injured and 7 people are killed using just a car and knives in London, a major world capital. And then the response by the police department in that town is for their citizens to run and hide. I can't for the life of me figure any of that out. And so here in America, it seems foreign. We don't encourage people to run out and start shooting people, but you don't have to ask people twice here. The idea of somebody having the right to defend themselves seems like a basic human principle. And so here we have these maniacs that continue the carnage. If you look through what's happened, even here in the San Bernardino, the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, Florida. Now you've got what happened at Manchester with this guy with a bomb. And if you aren't familiar with some of the details of that bomb, it was professionally made. He got that through his training. They believe he built the bomb himself and how he was trained. And the bomb explosion was so severe that it left shrapnel buried in concrete walls and steel doors. This was a guy that knew he was not only going to be in a very crowded place, but it was going to be crowded with young girls. When does the UK, the rest of Europe, other nations that are having these open door policies with refugees going to realize that the people that hate them, that hate us, will stop at nothing to make that happen? Nothing. And yet we watch what happened in London, and the response from the police department was run and hide. And the response from the prime minister was, let's control the internet so we can stop these people from being radicalized. I don't know how that's going to stop anyone from being radicalized. It's not going to stop anything. It stops absolutely nothing. And yet that seems to be the policy that we're going to live by. I know that when you look at police agencies around, and it depends on where you're from. If you're from a place that is gun friendly, that is, you in a place like where I live, the police officers expect you that you're armed. And when you tell them, and I always do when I've been pulled over, unfortunately, it's happened more than once. I've always told them I have a firearm in the vehicle. I'm not required to, but I do. And I offer to let them take it. 9 times out of 10, they just don't worry about it. They say, just don't make, any sudden movements. Don't reach for the weapon. You're fine. They're armed and you're armed. If you're interacting with somebody that's peaceful, it's not a problem. The criminals carry concealed weapons because the criminals don't care about gun laws, just like these people don't have any concern for human life. So when they were setting off bombs, it became more difficult for them to get the bomb-making material without being caught. When they tried to use guns, it wasn't as successful for them. After a while, we found ways around that. Now they're using vehicles to run people over in public places, and the world is changing. When I was in Washington, D.C. for the inauguration, all the way around the Capitol, around the National Mall where the inauguration was taking place, all of the streets were blocked off. They weren't just blocked off with small barricades. They were blocked off with city buses and dump trucks parked perpendicular in the intersection, too deep, so that there was no vehicle that was going to ram through that intersection and continue down the road to run people over. That was a direct reaction from what we saw in Paris and what we saw in Germany. There's no way around the fact that the intelligence is proving that. Look how we've changed the way we fly after 9/11, how we've secured the cockpit doors. We have always been changing when they change. The shoe bomber, remember that? Now we take our shoes off at the airport. Now what do we do for this threat? Because it's not here yet. Don't think that ISIS isn't trying. Don't think that we don't have great people, because we definitely do. In the intelligence gathering world, at the Federal Bureau of Investigations, all the other investigative agencies that are watching them, we now know that they are doing a fantastic job because they thwarted some of these attacks. How do we stop this from happening if we aren't able to protect ourselves as citizens and we don't have enough people that take it seriously enough? How do they know if this guy has been reported? At least one of these attackers was reported on two occasions. And what they're looking at now, and it's hard to be a Monday morning quarterback, is they'll go back and say, how did he slip through the cracks? Just like the Manchester bomber. That guy was someone that was known to the police. But when in the end, he was not on the top of their priority list. You're balancing manpower with severity of threat. And this guy was deemed not a severe threat at that time. I guarantee you that those people are going back now and trying to figure out what they missed. What about these three guys? They now have a bunch of people in custody. As they search more and more, it's getting close to the elections there. What are they going to do next? How do we stop them, or how do they stop the next terrorist attack from coming? That's always been the big concern. And now we're watching a police department tell their citizens to run and hide. I wouldn't have any faith in an agency that told me that. This should be aggressively fought. They should be arming the police officers on the streets and telling their citizens that they will always, always do everything that's necessary to protect their citizens. And I don't see how we get around anything other than that. Want to shift gears before we finish off the hour. Kathy Griffin, we know about the headless picture that she took with President Trump and the fallout, then her press conference, which I don't even know that was real. That had to be part of the act. But now you've got Hollywood elites like Alec Baldwin, Jamie Foxx, and Jim Carrey defending her. We'll talk about the ability to defend somebody when it's indefensible just because you like them. So we'll do that coming up here in a few moments. Again, my name is Mike Broomhead. I'm filling in for Glenn. It's the Glenn Beck Program.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Just getting some breaking news. Apparently, there's been an incident in Orlando, Florida, at a business headquarters where there are multiple fatalities. The Orange County Sheriff's Office tweeting out there in Orlando, Florida, working a shooting scene that has stabilized, multiple fatalities, situation contained. Sheriff will brief as soon as info is accurate. So about breaking news coming out about an incident in Orlando, Florida, with multiple fatalities and a shooting, which I'm sure we'll be looking into this morning. As more details come in, I'll bring that to you as soon as we can. Kathy Griffin, Alec Baldwin, Jamie Foxx, Jim Carrey. This to me, let me just mirror some things, just a couple of things to just compare and contrast. We have to be fair. Ann Coulter is not allowed to speak on a college campus. They're going to burn the place down if she shows up there. I've been critical to some degree, as successful, and she's a lot smarter than I am, but I've been critical of the fact that there are times when she'll be inflammatory versus smart. And what I mean by that is her point may be brilliant, but she delivers it in a way that incites people, which is just her style. But at the same time, there's nothing that she's ever said that's compared to what we saw in that photograph. There's no doubt in the minds of anybody what symbolism that was. The conversation about a noose left at the Black History Museum is absolute symbolism. There's no doubt that is a horrible piece of symbolism. There's no doubt in my mind or anybody else with an ounce of common sense that Kathy Griffin holding up a head by the hair, the same way you see those ISIS videos and ISIS pictures, that was symbolism. And she thought it was funny, and it wasn't. It crossed a big line. Then she apologized. There came to be a point where I thought even that press conference she gave was staged. It was like, what could we possibly say that could be the worst thing you would say if you've done something wrong? Well, let's blame the victim. Let's blame the Trump family for what I did. But aside from that, the reaction from people, you have conservative speakers that are going to speak on campuses, whether you agree with the way they deliver their message or not, and they're burning the campuses down. The police have to be called because they're going to burn the place to the ground for somebody speaking. And yet nobody seems to be outraged about this. Alec Baldwin defended her. Jim Carrey. And I got to be honest, I'm a huge Jim Carrey fan. This is the part of it that really is difficult sometimes. I think Jamie Foxx is one of the most talented people in Hollywood. Jim Carrey's movie, the first time I saw Ace Ventura, I thought I was going to cry. I was laughing so hard. Very talented people love their work. But how can they be of the mindset? Jim Carrey saying that comedians are supposed to push the line. That they're the last defense. They're the last people telling the truth. Well, you're kind of fooling yourself there. There's a lot of people that tell the truth. And when somebody says something you don't agree with, you call it hateful. You want them shut down. You don't like the message by Milo or by, Ann Coulter. You don't like Glenn Beck as a right-wing host and that says inflammatory things. Any of them. Pick any of us in talk radio. Me to a much lesser degree, not as well known. But you get the same people that think you're hateful because of the things you say. And yet they'll make excuses and defend Kathy Griffin. She's telling the truth. She's one of the last people telling the truth. Come on. What truth was she telling with those pictures? What truth was being told? How is Kathy Griffin contributing to the argument that Donald Trump is a bad guy or a bad president with that picture? Do you realize, you want to talk about propaganda. People are in the media reaction in the next hour, the media reaction to the attacks in London. But one member of the media thinks that the president may be inciting attacks in America. What do you think Kathy Griffin did? You don't think that the members of the Islamists are going to say that there is an American woman holding the head of the dead president. That's what the Americans think of their president. You don't think that's used for propaganda with the enemy? How anybody could defend what she did is repulsive. And then my other favorite part of this was they would then go after someone like Ted Nugent or somebody else who said something. And at the very least, I would say to those people, what you've just said is that Kathy Griffin is no different than Ted Nugent. Tell me what you think of Ted Nugent. Exactly. What do you think of Ted Nugent? How can you say anything different about Kathy Griffin and what she did? Except she doubled down with a press conference. And I'll be honest, I think that was something contrived to go out and blame the Trump family, get a lawyer and say you're being bullied by the Trump family, seems to me that she is just trying to stretch this as long as she can. That this now has become publicity for her. And has nothing to do with whether I'm a fan of her work or not. She has a right to say the things she says. But doing that, there's a backlash. There is always repercussions for what you do. And Kathy Griffin suffered a repercussion. She lost her job at CNN. She got dropped by a casino. Was not going to air her. We're not going to have her perform there. She lost a sponsor. What's wrong with that? I mean, Bill O'Reilly left Fox News. And everybody said that's what happens when you behave that way. Well, there was no proof he did anything. There were a lot of accusations. He didn't go on trial for anything. His reputation was damaged. And if you listen to some people, they'll tell you that he didn't deserve to be fired. But he left. So if there's repercussions for behavior, how can anybody argue with the repercussions that Kathy Griffin suffered? Well, the way you argue it is when you defend people you like, when you defend people that agree with you. That bad, abhorrent behavior is okay as long as it's directed at somebody you hate. If it wasn't somebody you like, it'd be terrible. All right, coming up in the next hour, we'll get some more information on what happened in Orlando, Florida. I'm sure that we'll talk about the media's reaction to the London attacks, and you're going to be surprised at what they had to say.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome into the Glenn Beck Program. My name is Mike Broomhead, in from Phoenix, Arizona, for Glenn for the next couple of days. Thanks for being a part of the show today. However you're listening or watching, we're glad you're here. Some of the headlines we've got to get to, of course, we're going to talk this hour about the media's reaction to what happened in London, the London attackers, and how the media has responded, which I guess should surprise me by now, but doesn't. So in a few moments, we'll get to that. In Orlando, Florida, earlier this morning, we reported at the end of last hour, there has been a multiple fatality shooting at a business in Orlando, Florida. They say it's contained. The sheriff has not yet spoken out about what the details are. When they have accurate information, they're going to release some of that. So we don't have any idea of what this disgruntled worker, what this could have been, but multiple fatalities in Orlando, Florida this morning. Orange County Sheriff's Office tweeting out about that just a little while ago. Seven dead, 48 injured in the London attacks, which is a big part of what we talked about last hour. And the reaction from the London Police Department saying that you should just run and hide. That doesn't seem to me to be a plan to eradicate terrorism. That seems to me to be a way to save your life in the short term. Nobody wants to be, I don't want to be a hero. I'm not looking to be John Wayne or Chuck Norris. It's not my thing. I would rather resolve things differently. But when faced with a threat, a life-changing or life-challenging threat, I would hope that I would respond in a way that would protect myself and the people around me. When the police department in your town tells you to run and hide, when your mayor says terrorism is just going to be a fact of life, when controlling the internet is what your government believes is going to end the Islamist threat, then I think we're in bigger trouble than we imagined. Because now you're an unarmed citizenry. The laws are such that guns are banned there. And you're not allowed to defend yourself, and they've basically told you they can't. What now? So it's very surprising what's happened. I thought after the Manchester bombing, nothing gets a more visceral reaction out of someone than when you threaten or hurt their children. And when the Manchester bomber set off that horrible bomb, where he knew it was going to be filled with mostly young girls, but a lot of young people. I thought the hearts and minds of people would be changed to the fact that the Islamists want to kill us all and terrorize us all, and there is no way to make terror in the hearts of people than to threaten or hurt their children. And they showed that they would go to those depths of killing children. And I thought for sure there'd be a different mindset. So here we are days later, 48 people injured, 7 people killed in attack where they're run over by a car and then stabbings until finally 8 minutes later, the terrorists are killed. And yet it doesn't seem yet like they're ready or willing to say we're all in on stopping this. That doesn't mean there's a religious test like here in America. It doesn't. What it means is we are going to take the threat of the Islamists seriously, that we are going to eradicate them, that we will start where they are. We will start with them in Syria and Iraq, where ISIS has their strongholds, and we will decimate their leadership, and we will do everything we need to do to destroy their network. We then will make it more difficult for anybody associated with them to do business. One of the points of the president's trip to the Middle East, when he went to Saudi Arabia and told the Saudis that they have to be more involved in fighting terrorism, that they have to stop doing business, that we have to slow the flow of cash, the ability for them to build and buy weapons starts with commerce, and that they're responsible in some ways for stopping that. I thought that was a great point to be made. Now we've got to figure out a way where they are in the streets, these lone wolf attackers that believe they're part of a bigger cause. You know, the streets of America, the closest thing we can think of are the gangs, the street gangs, the MS-13 gang from South America, El Salvadorian gang, that is just the most brutal, closest thing to ISIS that we have in North America, and that they will fight their enemies with cutting off heads and with brutality that's beyond brutality. And it just gets to a point where they just show you that they will stop at nothing. And that's how they terrorize neighborhoods and towns and other rival gangs. Well, whether it's Hezbollah or it's Al-Qaeda or it's ISIS, it doesn't matter if it's the Bloods or if it's the Crips or if it's MS-13. These are all violent gangs that don't like each other. They will kill each other if they want to. And they've got no problem murdering anybody that gets in their way. You don't have to join their ranks, but you better stay out of their way. And God help you if you speak out against them. Sounds familiar to me. It's in the streets of America in our gangs, but nothing like we're seeing to the degree here. And if we had a police department that said, if the Los Angeles Police Department said to the citizens of Los Angeles, when you see gang members, run and hide, what would we do? What would you do if whatever town you live in, the threat of gang violence was real? Chicago, Illinois, and the murders and the shootings that have gone on there. What would you say if the police department's reaction in Chicago to the citizens of Chicago is run and hide? That police agency, that the chief of police would be laughed out of office. And that's what they're saying. And I'm shocked. I thought for sure after the Manchester bombing, this would be taken in a different path. A couple of the other headlines. Bill Maher uses the N-word during his broadcast. And some people are calling for him to be fired, and others are calling, are defending him. And it doesn't matter to me either way. I just think that there needs to be some consistency. If he gets away with this, is it something to be said for free speech? Just change the station. That's how I've always felt about things that people call offensive. If you don't like it, change the station. I have no problem with that. But if someone else is going to lose their job for the words they say, then how do you not have this person lose their job for the, again, it's the thought police. It's the politically correct. We like Bill Maher. We love the things he stands for. We love the fact that he hates Donald Trump. We love the fact that he hates conservatives and Republicans. So we love all that stuff, but that went too far. So now what? And it's again, what's the price to pay for him to pay? James Comey is set to testify. And that's something we'll talk about a little bit later on in the next, in this hour, a second part of the hour, is James Comey is going to testify. Congressional leaders saying, and I'm giving you a quote here, there is smoke, but no smoking gun yet. They always give you the caveat of yet. Going down the list of leaders that they've asked, on the Democratic side of this, on the even Maxine Waters, who has been screaming the word impeachment for months now. Maxine Waters had to admit they don't have any proof. She, of course, said yet, as of yet. And what do we do? At what point do we say there's no evidence here and we've got to drop this? Is James Comey's testimony going to be the end of this? There's an investigation into Hillary Clinton that she may have tried to use her power to help a friend of her foundation while she was Secretary of State. We'll see how far that goes, because I imagine that much like the left has always done, they want the investigation to continue into President Trump because he ran as a Republican, and they hate the idea of Hillary being investigated for anything because they agree with her politically. So the way those two, the compare and contrast about the way those two are handled is really important. And the Paris Agreement, Chris Wallace actually calls out Al Gore. It's phenomenal. So we'll talk about the Paris Agreement, what the United States plan is going to be moving forward. Are we really setting the world on fire by not sticking to this Paris Agreement, like the left would tell you? And, you know, everything in life doesn't have to be this. It doesn't have to be an argument of left versus right. It doesn't have to be conservative versus liberal. There are a lot of really good Democrats in this country, and there's a lot of really good Republicans in this country. And then there are people that just aren't politically aligned that are good people that wants what's best for America. We can sit down and we want the same thing. We want America to prosper. We want our children and our grandchildren to have better opportunities than we've had. We want everyone to have the ability to chase the American dream. We all want those things. We differ on how to get there. This idea of left versus right all the time has gotten us in the boat we're in. So, talking about the media in a few moments, the media's reaction to the terrorist attacks, what some have said about the president's reaction, what some have said about the attacks themselves, and what some are saying is the answer to the solution coming from the media in America, it makes me just shake my head at how the quality of our news media has dwindled in America. So that's coming up here in just a few moments. Again, my name is Mike Broomhead. I'm in for Glenn. It's the Glenn Beck Program.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program. The Glenn Beck Program.
All right, we have an update on what's going on in Orlando, Florida right now. Five people, including the shooter, are dead after a shooting at an Orlando, Florida business. And police are saying it's not connected to terrorism. They believe it's a work-related incident, maybe a disgruntled employee or something. But five people are dead, including the shooter in Orlando. The sheriff's department has the area locked down, but they say the situation is contained, that there's no danger to the public. But again, a mass shooting, a multiple shooting in Orlando, Florida. And I'm waiting to find out what happened about, and some of these, what we've seen, whether these are these mass shootings or these, what seem to be these horrific crimes. Sometimes, sometimes they're very well thought out, and other times they seem to be kind of a spur of the moment, as if they've just, someone just kind of snaps and starts murdering people. The Facebook killer, the guy that did it on Facebook Live that just walked up and murdered that old man because of his girlfriend. What a horrific crime. But looking at the connection between you know, why people do things as opposed to what they use to do them. And one of the not trying to connect the two of these, but President Trump tweeting out, we're not having a gun conversation because these people used a car and knives in London is a point that needs to be dealt with. Anytime a gun is used in America, immediately the left will run out and talk about it being the problem that we have too many guns on the streets, or it's the problem of guns. And I can tell you that the gun is not the problem anymore. And I know it's kind of crass in the wake of people being murdered. And I don't mean to be, I'm not mocking people being dead. But saying that we need to reduce the size of magazines or clips, they call them, but it's a magazine, so that you can only put a certain number of rounds in a magazine that can be fired from a semi-automatic pistol is going to help, is like saying we're going to start making cars smaller so it doesn't kill as many people when you run them over with it. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't solve anything. That's my biggest problem with it, is that it is not a solution. People will pat themselves on the back. If we created more strict gun laws in this country, they would pat themselves on the back as if they had solved a problem, which is more dangerous than the way it is now. It's like going to the doctor with an illness and a doctor telling you he knows the cure, prescribing you medicine for the wrong illness. So you think you've gotten help and you stop worrying about the problem, but the problem that you really had continues to fester. It's no different. We are talking about gun laws in America as if that's going to solve the problem. I know I've beat a dead horse with this way too much when I talk about this, but take Adam Lanza, the kid, the Sandy Hook Elementary killing. That kid, dangerously, severely mentally ill. The laws they wanted to change after that shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary, one of the Bloomberg and all those groups, one of the changes they wanted to make was more background checks for even hand-to-hand sales between citizens, with the exception of immediate family members. Well, you don't want to know how dumb that is in light of what happened. Adam Lanza used his mother's guns to kill people. A, he had no business with them. B, he shot her in her sleep to take them. So the guy was already deranged. Why aren't we looking at the cause? Instead, we're going to talk about the gun, and the solution they wanted wouldn't have solved the problem. If you had changed the laws, Adam Lanza still could have gotten the guns from his mom. You would have never known. It makes no sense. And you can't tell me how someone like myself, a decent, nonviolent person, is more dangerous when I'm armed. How is society safer if you take my firearms away? And we're not. And if we're talking about public safety, we have no idea what's happened here in Orlando. None. We don't know what the conditions were, why this person did the shooting. No answers yet. No identities, no nothing. But what happens when we find out more details about this person? What do you think the conversation's going to be about? And you can see it coming from a mile away. So updates as the show goes on and we find out more about Orlando. If they identify some of the victims or identify the shooter, I'll let you know what happened there. Even the name of the company I don't have right now. Let's talk about the media's reaction to what happened in London. Reza Aslan is from CNN. He called the president a piece of you know what he did, and apologized for it later, saying he shouldn't have used that language. Thomas Roberts from MSNBC asks, is Trump trying to provoke a domestic terrorist attack with the London tweets? The premise for this is ludicrous. So we are supposed to watch how we talk about them. So is the media's attacks on Donald Trump, if let's use their analogy, if Donald Trump's words are going to cause terrorists to want to attack, therefore, if they attack, it's Donald Trump's fault for what he said. Is the media guilty for what Kathy Griffin did to the president? The media has been on a full frontal assault on the president. They won't cut him a break for anything. And is that assault on him making it easier and more, is it make it okay for Kathy Griffin to do what she did? It's stupid. There's one person to blame for that picture, Kathy Griffin and the photographer. But Kathy Griffin for posing for that picture. Donald Trump has nothing to do with terrorist attacks. He's not inciting anybody to do anything. And this one, following the London terror attacks this weekend, MSNBC's Richard Liu wanted to know if police were overreacting to the attacks. He said, what is the risk there? Certainly is a risk of underreaction, but is there any risk of overreaction? You know, as we've been watching all of this live coverage, is there ever a point where you say, well, that's too much. You shouldn't be applying that amount of force there. They ran 48 people over or stabbed. There was a total of 55 people damaged, 7 of them killed and 48 injured. And you have a host on a major, well, I mean, I'm cutting them way too much slack by calling them a major news network, but saying that they overreacted? What if it was your house? What if it was somebody throwing rocks at your house? What if it was somebody threatening your life, not acting on it, not stabbing you, but threatening you? Would there be any level of overreaction from the police? Would it be possible for them to overreact? And yet the media is asking this question because it's this president. How about the underreaction from the previous administration that allowed this to fester? How about the fact that the president that you hold in such high regard called ISIS the JV squad? Did not take them seriously for 1 second. When the Russians went into Syria the way they did, we did nothing. And I know I've told this story before. When the Russians decided to start dropping bombs in Syria, they gave the United States about 90 minutes notice. Somebody showed up in Baghdad and told them, we're dropping bombs. You better pull your people out. And we did. We didn't push back. We didn't do anything. When the red line in Syria was crossed on three different occasions, we just drew another line in the sand. And at some point, you have to realize that you've got to fight people. The Tomahawk missiles onto that airfield because of the chemical attack sent a message that America is going to be a part of the solution. We are not going to sit back. There is always a time and place for diplomacy. I think what happened in North Korea is that that's diplomacy. That's diplomatic negotiations. And there's times when you have to act. And I think so far, we're showing that as Americans, we need to act a little bit more. Coming up in just a few moments, we'll talk about James Comey testifying, Hillary Clinton under investigation, all that coming up, and we'll get more updates on what's happened in Orlando if that story continues to develop. We'll talk about that. We'll be back.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
All right, thanks for being here. My name is Mike Broomhead in for Glenn. Just an update as we've been talking about this situation in Orlando. It seems to be a contained situation. Five people dead, including the shooter, at what they're calling a workplace incident. The sheriff's office trying to be clear and saying that the terrorism is not involved, that this seems to be an isolated work-related incident. So it's contained. Shooter is dead. The situation is safe in the surrounding area, although the investigation goes on. No names have been released. But as the information comes out, we'll bring that to you. It's interesting how we look at a situation like this and think, is it terrorism? And then if it's not, we kind of turn our back to it. It's still a huge national story. I thought it would be a bigger national story in Phoenix. We had Comic-Con last week or the week before. We had Comic-Con in Phoenix. And a guy on Friday began to post pictures on send pictures to a friend of his with police officers and calling them possible targets. He wanted to kill bad police officers. And he was dressed as, I think, a character, a Marvel character called the Enforcer. I think I'm not a comic book guy. And so the police were on the, she called the police and turned over all the text messages, and they were on the lookout for this guy. And when the police found him at inside of Comic-Con, because, you know, you can bring in fake weapons and they just put a zip tie on them to show that they're not real. And you're allowed to have props while you're at Comic-Con. Well, they found this guy with a loaded shotgun, three loaded handguns, reserve ammunition, Chinese throwing stars, and covered. He had body armor on front and back when they took him to the ground. Nobody was shot, thankfully. And the Phoenix Police Department did a phenomenal job of stopping the shooter. And because there was no blood, it wasn't that big of a story. I thought that was one of the attacks that was thwarted. How many people could he have killed with a shotgun and three handguns before he was gunned down himself? How many police officers could he have killed? But the attack was stopped. So person very thoughtful on social media and got to the police. Police did a great job of detaining the guy and tackling, taking him to the ground and disarming him. So we'll find out what's going on in Orlando. It doesn't seem to be the same type of situation, but we'll let you know as we find out. I wanted to talk about James Comey testifying. He's scheduled to testify this week. I believe on Thursday is when he's scheduled to testify. And there is Mark Warner, who is a senator from Virginia, said, listen, there's a lot of smoke. We have no smoking gun at this point, but there is a lot of smoke. I just want you to let that sink in. They have been investigating, and this is why I laugh about this. I was criticized pretty soundly by a lot of the very diehard Trump supporters because I didn't give the president, and at the time the candidate, a pass on a lot of issues. I'm finding myself becoming a lot more of a Trump defender because of the way the media is handling him. I just want a fair portrayal. If you're critical of this White House, you should be. But you should have been critical of the Obama White House. You want to say there's some connection to Russians and some connection to this and the president's using the power of his office. Do you realize that, and I'm going back to a story I know I mentioned way too much, but do you realize that Operation Fast and Furious that was carried out in the southwestern United States, where over 2,000 guns were trucked into Mexico under the surveillance of the ATF, so to speak. The ATF was responsible for allowing this to happen. And when those guns got into Mexico and nobody was told about it, they didn't tell the Border Patrol. They didn't tell ICE. According to Janet Napolitano, she was never told. They didn't tell the border sheriffs in border towns. They didn't tell the Mexican federales that they had just allowed the drug cartels to have 2,000 AR-15 rifles. And then when Brian Terry, the Border Patrol agent, was found dead, and one of those guns was at the scene of his murder, then they said something. Then we found out about Operation Fast and Furious. Do you realize it was an executive order from President Obama that stopped all of those documents pertaining to Fast and Furious to get into the hands of the congressional investigators, protecting Eric Holder or anybody else in the Justice Department that may have okayed that operation? Where's the media outrage? You probably don't even know the details of that story. I only know it because I lived it. It happened in my hometown, and I know people that were directly involved. How is there no media outrage over two? These are the people that hate guns. 2,000 rifles trucked into Mexico, and it was covered up by the White House with an executive order saying it was a national security issue, so Eric Holder couldn't be investigated. Nobody else in the Justice Department could be investigated. That investigation was stymied because of that executive order. No one saying he abused the power of his office there. No one there criticizing and calling for impeachment. Nobody, nothing like that happened. I have no problem being very critical of every single administration. That's what the press is supposed to do. Skeptical, asking for answers, demanding answers, digging for the truth. I get all of it. But at what point do you do that on both sides of the aisle? Because it's not happening. So here's what happened. James Comey's going to testify. I don't know what he has to say about being pressured. By the way, his meeting with the president, let's talk about one other meeting. Tarmac, Sky Harbor Airport, Phoenix, Arizona. At the time, the attorney general and former President Bill Clinton with a private meeting on an airplane. This while she was investigating Hillary about the email crimes and everything else. They had this closed door meeting, which everybody called inappropriate. Nobody cared. You know, he just said we were talking about our grandkids. You tell me if somebody goes to the Justice Department now from the Trump family, what's going to happen if there's a private closed door meeting? It's not a fair way to portray any of this. If you're going to be critical of one, you got to be critical of or should be of everybody. The other part of this, Hillary Clinton, the Senate Committee on Judiciary, on the Judiciary Chairman Chuck Grassley has launched a new investigation of former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton in an effort to thwart a Bangladesh government corruption probe because one of the Muhammad Yunus is a Clinton Foundation donor and a close friend of the Clintons. So she is being investigated, not yet accused, but being investigated for abusing the power of her office as Secretary of State. If you remember, her words were there was going to be a great firewall erected between her as Secretary of State and her foundation. And that wall came crumbling down, we found out, through the emails that were released because they were having direct conversations. Even when we were doing the hurricane relief in Haiti, I believe it was, or was it earthquake relief, where they were they have contracts that are given out through the State Department. So you can be a State Department, an NGO, and you can get contract work to help with the cleanup and to help with humanitarian efforts, and you get paid by the government. That's what you will do. And the way it was handled was people were told, if they are friends of the foundation or friends of Bill, you give them this phone number and you call us direct. They can call us directly. If they're not donors, big donors to the foundation, and they're or not VIPs or big friends of Bill Clinton, direct them to this website to submit their application. Anybody have a problem with that? I do. We know about getting preferential treatment and seats at functions. One person couldn't get a meeting with the Secretary of State through proper channels through the State Department. So Huma Abedin was contacted. She was contacted by somebody from the foundation who said this guy has donated a lot of money to the foundation, is trying to get a meeting with the secretary, but can't get through it through proper channels. And Huma's reply was, we've just sent them some dates. Let us know which one works, and brokered the meeting that way. And now she's being investigated for using the power of the State Department to block an investigation into a friend in a foreign country. If we're going to try to connect the dots with this president and Russia, and if there are connections that I've said from the beginning, if this president or anybody in his administration or his campaign team, if anybody on that team colluded with Russian agents on the election, the American people need to know, and let them decide in 4 years if he deserves to be president. If he broke the law, should there be impeachment trials? Yeah, if he broke the law, there should be. But it also is important to note that they have been investigating this since probably before the inauguration, and they don't have one shred of evidence. Any one of the phone calls that was intercepted, they have said from the beginning, there's no smoking gun. There doesn't appear to be any collusion whatsoever. And it doesn't matter who it is on the left, when pressed, is there any evidence? They say there is none. James Comey is set to testify, but they say they have absolutely no evidence that anything was done wrong. So those two investigations, we'll see how much the media covers an investigation into what Hillary might have done. And James Comey's testimony, I imagine, is going to be carried live because he's going to do two meetings. One's going to be an open door session and one's going to be a closed door session with a committee. Coming up in a few moments, the Paris Agreement and Chris Wallace calling out Al Gore for every one of his predictions in An Inconvenient Truth being inconveniently false. So we'll get to that coming up in just a few moments. Again, my name is Mike Broomhead and this is the Glenn Beck Program.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
888-727-BACK.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
All right, thanks for being here this morning. We got a lot to talk about, the Orlando update on Orlando. I didn't realize this, but I guess it's a week before how fast time flies, a week before the anniversary of the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando. So the people of Orlando, when this went out this morning, if you're just joining the show, five people killed at a workplace incident, including the shooter. So we don't know if it was somebody defending them that shot the shooter, if it was a self-inflicted wound. We don't know why it happened yet. We know it was at a business in Orlando. They're saying it's not terrorist related, that this was a workplace incident that went horribly wrong. Witnesses said they heard gunshots. Police say that the situation is stable, but it's a week before the anniversary of the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando, which would obviously have the people of Orlando in a very, very tense place. Before we get out of this hour, the Paris Agreement and the arrogance of the Paris Agreement, and a couple of things. Let's start with, first of all, the ridiculous. John Kerry. John Kerry said when Trump says he'll negotiate a better climate deal, it's like O.J. Simpson saying he's going to go out and find the real killer. Again, let's hear anybody make that comparison with our former president, O.J. Simpson, and any of the decisions he's made. What President Trump has said is that the Paris Agreement was bad for America and that it was a very badly negotiated plan for us, which falls at the feet of the president's policies and our former Secretary of State, John Kerry. That's why he's very critical of President Trump now. But the president went on to say he believes that the climate is changing and that humans have got some responsibility. So what can be done is the question. And so where you stand on global warming doesn't necessarily matter as much as I'm talking about the coverage of all of this. I have my own very strong opinions on global warming and climate change. And I think the climate changes. There's no doubt the climate changes. To what degree the human beings have an effect, I don't think it's anywhere near what they're saying. And if you're old enough like I am to remember, the very same science that was saying in the 1970s that we had an ice age coming. So maybe we did too good of a job. Because back in the 70s, there were these horrific storms that were hitting the northeastern United States, and they were pounding Buffalo, New York, and other places around the area. Then they would go down the Erie Canal, and they would hammer the Midwest. They'd hammer Cleveland right there on the shores of Lake Erie. And the suspicion was, Time Magazine, I believe, ran the story, that there was an impending ice age, and it would be frozen about 9 months of the year, which meant that there only 3 months of thaw would not be enough to grow crops. So we were going to starve because we couldn't grow food. So the science then was, what we're doing to the planet is causing an ice age. So my question is, did we listen to those scientists and do exactly what they said? And we did it so well that now we're setting the world on fire. So now we have to do something different, because now climate change is about the heating and how the ice caps are melting and the seas are going to rise. And I just, to be honest, we all should be responsible citizens. When it comes to hunting and fishing, who cares more about the environment of the forests? The environmental groups who don't know anything about it, or the men and women and the generations of families that spend the best times of their lives in the forests? And, you know, it doesn't make any sense to go along with the logic that doesn't work. And this global warming, climate change is another level of people saying we care more than you do, where that's not the case. I don't want unclean water. I mean, I've got grandkids now. I don't want I've got from 5.5 to 8 months and one on the way. I don't want them in 20 years to be suffering in a world that's polluted. No, the water's no good and the air is no good and you can't go outside. And I don't want that for them. And I would be dumb if I was to say I'm going to sacrifice so that my business, when I had my business or any business, can profit more. But we don't care if it damages the soil or the water or the air. Most people don't feel that way. But this overregulation is strangling business and doing no good for the environment. Chris Wallace confronts Al Gore. Chris Wallace on Fox News Sunday confronted Vice President Al Gore, and he said, unless we take drastic measures, the world would reach a point of no return within 10 years, which Gore said would precipitate true planetary crisis. Wallace pointed out it's been 11 years since Gore made the claim and an inconvenient truth, and there doesn't seem to be any planetary emergency. So Gore said, well, we have seen a decline in emissions on a global basis. For the first time, they've stabilized and started to decline. So some of the response to the last 10 years have helped. So in other words, if it wasn't for Al Gore, we'd all be dead. Didn't he invent the internet too? So he saved the planet and invented the internet. I mean, when are we going to put this guy on Mount Rushmore? So inconvenient truth, nice spin on the fact that it was just inconveniently not true at all. Next hour, we'll talk about the holy month of Ramadan and how many people have been killed in the name of Islam by the Islamists during this holy month. Don't go away.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hey, thanks for being here. I'm Mike Broomhead. I'm in for Glenn. And we've got a lot going on. This Orlando shooting, as we speak, there is a press conference going on where they are updating everyone on the situation in Orlando. What the police have said is, first of all, they don't believe that it was any subversive groups. They don't believe this is terrorist related, that the shooter shot five people. Now, it was reported five people were dead. So I'm confused, and we'll find out if it is six people that are dead, because The shooter shot himself as well. So five others were shot, including the shooter. The sheriff making it clear that as far as they can tell, no subversive groups in any way here. So that makes more sense now that it's a work-related incident. This a week before the anniversary of the Pulse nightclub shooting, where you would know that the city of Orlando would be on high alert or at least be very tense when they hear about a shooting in a situation like this. So the Orange County Sheriff's Office right now, as we speak, giving a press conference, the updated information to come. I'm sure I'll have a lot more information in the coming minutes for you as to exactly what happened in Orlando and why. We are going to continue to speak this hour about terrorist attacks around the world. You know, when you look at, is it an act of terrorism? And the reason, the definition has nothing to do with it being done by Islamists. It's intent. There are murders. There are people that, and it's a horrible crime. The intent by the Islamists around the world is to terrorize, is to breed terror in people, to make you not feel safe in your home. 9/11 woke America up, and as to how small this world really is, we lived in a false sense of security where a few people could board airplanes and do such severe damage. And make no mistake of the symbolism of those attacks. The World Trade Center, the economic center of what they hate about the West, the Pentagon and our military. Another plane that they it was either going to hit the Capitol building or possibly the White House. The symbolism is exactly what you would think it would be. That's terrorism. What happened at the Manchester bomber at the Ariana Grande concert was terrorism. They wanted everyone to know your children are not safe on a night out. You look at every one of these and the symbolism that is in them. That's different than what something like this would be if it's a disgruntled worker. It doesn't make it any less severe. It doesn't make it any less tragic for the families of those that have been injured or killed. But it's a different kind of symbolism. And we're dealing with the London attacks again, right before their elections. And the people of London are having such a difficult time getting their arms around the fact that within their ranks, within their citizenry, are people that hate them enough to do the things that they're doing. New word out about one of the attackers known to the police, tried to travel to Syria, and they just decided to take a car, drive it across London Bridge, running people over, and then get out of the vehicle and attack people at a marketplace with knives. You get away with that because it's an unarmed citizenry. In Texas, if you remember when they had that contest for the Muhammad picture drawing contest or whatever, there were a couple of Islamists from Arizona that got in a car and decided they were going to shoot up the place. Well, they forgot about two things. A, you don't do it in Arizona, and you especially don't do it in Texas, because they didn't make it to the front door before they were gunned down. Now, again, not being bloodthirsty, being realistic and prepared. You can have somebody that is as passive as can be attack their children and see how passive they are. And so you look around at what's happened, and this is going to be a big part of the discussion as we move forward this hour. This is a very holy month in the Muslim faith, Ramadan. And what happens when you have a faith with, whether it's the Christmas season or Christmas Day for Christians, or it is Easter Sunday for Christians, or it's Passover for Jews around the world. There are holy days, holy weeks, holy months, and Hanukkah is such a holy time for Jews as well. And we're seeing the Islamists take what is supposed to be a significant month in that faith, and the number of people that have been murdered is staggering. So that's going to be a big part of the first half of this hour. One of the other headlines is James Comey. We talked last hour about James Comey and his testimony. I always, if somebody has done something wrong, we deserve to know. We need to know. And I think that the Trump supporters would agree that if there was anything to see, that they would want people to know. To what degree and how severe are they going to turn out to make something up here? No matter what it is. This reminds me a lot of Ferguson, Missouri. After what happened to Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, Hands Up, Don't Shoot, became a rallying cry of the Black Lives Matter and kind of the start of the Black Lives Matter movement. And it turned out that of all the things that could have been used, that one was just completely false. He was not on his knees begging for his life. But what happened in the wake of all of that was the Justice Department decided it's time for us to do something. So they sent federal agents in to investigate not just the Ferguson, Missouri Police Department, but to also investigate the justice system in Ferguson, Missouri, and found nothing. The only thing that they said was of consequence was that they gave out too many jaywalking tickets, too many stop and not stop and frisk, but too many contacts for jaywalking, that it was a nuisance or not abuse of power, just that there's an overwhelming number of those. So there was nothing to see, no matter how much they investigated it. And at some point, the federal investigators had to leave and acknowledge they couldn't find anything. And largely it went away in the media. This investigation into Russian collusion, if there is evidence, we need to see it. But if there isn't, and again, a senator from Virginia, a Democrat senator from Virginia said, there's a lot of smoke. We don't have a smoking gun yet, but there's a lot of smoke. I don't know what that means. And everyone out there, most people agree on both sides of the political aisle that we're afraid of government having too much power. People on the left would say that the government shouldn't have as much power over social issues, that, you know, you should stay out of people's bedrooms and stay out of people's business. The people on the right would say the government has way too much control over our money, our finances. They confiscate tax dollars from the states. They take it to Washington. They take their cut. They attach a ton of rules to it, and they send part of that money back to you. Plus, they redistribute. There are some states, kind of like in our tax structure, that get more money than they put in, and there are others that get less. And you wonder, and people on the right would say that's too powerful. But most people don't trust their government. And yet here we are, giving them more and more power. So the idea that the government or the government entities that are investigating the president are going to be dishonest, but when they are investigating, it'll only be dishonest if they find nothing. But with the Hillary Clinton investigation we just talked about last hour, she's being investigated for abusing the power of her office as Secretary of State. The people on the left would say they're being dishonest against her if they find something. So you can't please anyone. We just deserve the truth. And let's get this over with. Coming up in a few moments, we'll start with Ramadan, the holy month of Ramadan, and what the Islamists have done with it. The staggering number of people that have already been murdered during this month-long ceremony, this month-long holy observance. And we'll detail some of those and talk about the Islamists and what they've done. So that's coming up. More on this Orlando shooting now. The press conference is wrapping up. We'll get more on this coming up here in just a few moments. My name is Mike Broomhead, and this is the Glenn Beck Program.
Glenn Beck. Want to see Glenn live? If you're coming to Texas, you can. Yeah! Join us at Mercury Studios in Dallas for a taping of Glenn's television show. To reserve your seat, email tickets at glennbeck.com with your information. That's tickets at glennbeck.com. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Sign up for the newsletter and get all the info you need to know at glennbeck.com.
All right, thanks for being here this morning. An update of what's happening in Orlando. We are just finding out that a 45-year-old disgruntled ex-employee was armed with a handgun and a knife and eventually killed himself. So he killed, shot five other people and then turned the gun on himself, a former disgruntled employee. One of the things we pointed out was a possibility earlier. They're now confirming that. It does not appear to be terrorism related. It's not Islamist. It's not a terrorist group. It is a disgruntled employee that went back and for whatever reason murdered five people and then turned the gun on himself. It's one of those situations where now we will begin to have the conversation of who is this person? Why did he do it? Why did he have access to the guns that he had? And it's a sad commentary. It really is more about how detached you can be from reality, that the option for you is to murder people. Crimes of passion and murders between people that dislike or hate each other are horrible enough to have that kind of hate in your heart. But to murder strangers or co-workers, people that you barely know, it seems to me to be in a deeper place. Addressing a lot of this is important. And the more this comes up, we're going to hear more and more about this in the coming days. Bloomberg is going to come out with a statement. Other people will come out with statements of how we should be ending gun violence and hearing more about gun control. And it really is disrespectful to those of us that believe in firearms. You know, as I said, I don't see them. It's not a power. And anybody who's ever fired a handgun or a rifle, you realize the responsibility of what you're holding in your hand. It is nothing to joke about. And nobody that I know does. But when somebody uses it the wrong way, how do you blame the gun? We're going to find out more and pay closer attention to this person, whether it's somebody that has had some issues where they were told to go to counseling. And if you look at the statistically, go back through all of the mass shootings that are in recent memory, going all the way back to Columbine, from Virginia Tech to what happened in Tucson, Arizona, with a guy named Jared Loughran that gunned down a congresswoman and a judge and a little girl and multiple other people at an event on a Saturday morning. You look at James Holmes in Colorado, who did the theater shooting, Adam Lanza, who did the shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School. You look at all of those cases and what they have in common, two things. They used guns, but they also suffered from severe, dangerous mental illness. And it's such a fine line in America. We cannot lump everybody together that has some form of mental illness or another as dangerous. We can't do that. Just as like we couldn't say the common cold is the same thing as cancer. It's not. Two completely different things, both of them labeled as an illness. Things you would go see doctors for, but one is much more dangerous than the other. And so we can't stigmatize people because they have some sort of mental illness. We shouldn't be able to do that. But on the other hand, what can we do with people that are a danger to themselves or a danger to society? People that are prescribed psychotropic drugs that when they're on their medication can live a normal, fruitful life. But when they don't take their medication, they become a danger to society. They become a danger to themselves. So we can then, at times, when they pose threats, when they make threats, we can forcibly take them to a hospital, put them on a 72-hour hold or whatever. Doctors can then medicate them. Now they're on their medication. They're not making threats. They're not a threat to themselves. They're not a threat to society. So we can't hold them any longer. And I'm not saying that there's an easy answer, because there isn't. The same constitutional conversation you have to trying to take someone's rights or limit people's rights to accessing firearms, there is a very difficult constitutional argument that has to be had, or conversation has to be had, about what we can do about the people that are dangerously mentally ill. We are never going to stop every attack like what we just heard, what we're hearing about in Orlando. It happens, unfortunately. But we can, when the signs are there, figure out what we can do with people so that, like in the case of Virginia Tech, a guy's not walking in a gun-free zone, chaining doors shut and just shooting people. That to me is, let's get to the solution of how we stop this. Don't say, as was said by people after Sandy Hook, that people like myself care more about keeping my guns than I do about dead kids. That is a bigger kick in the stomach. That is an insult. I was so torn up over the Sandy Hook thing, I could almost not do my show that day. I didn't know what I was possibly going to say. I have a 5.5-year-old grandson. Those kids were 6, 7 years old. No way you're going to tell me that I'm heartless enough to say I'm risking their lives. It's not possible. The holy month of Ramadan is upon the Muslims across the world. And what does it mean? What's been happening? Just to give you an idea of what the Islamists are doing. During Ramadan, they're required to fast during the day. Fasting during Ramadan is so important to Muslims that it's included in Islam's 5 core beliefs known as the 5 pillars of Islam. During the holy month, Muslims focus on prayer, repentance, and coming closer to their God. While some Muslims use this month for peace, others for violence. So here is a time for fasting and prayer, which is also part of the major faiths in the world. Christianity talks about fasting and prayer. The story of Jesus fasting for 40 days. You know, the Jews have a tradition of fasting as well. And so for the Muslim faith, this is an important month where they fast during the day. So what's happened? Well, we know that in Baghdad, there was a very popular ice cream shop in the city, where after the fasting at the end of the day, families would go to this place to kind of break the fast in a fun way. They set off a bomb that murdered a bunch of people. A couple of days later in Kabul, in Afghanistan, a car bomb was detonated during rush hour traffic, in which over 80 people were killed. The death toll so far during the month of Ramadan by Islamists, murders by Islamists against other Muslims, totaled 149 people. That death toll of 149 was before what happened in London on the London Bridge. And the fact that only 7 people are dead there is a miracle, with 48 others being injured. So we're looking at, and I don't want to, it shouldn't be a religious debate. This should be about the people that are doing this. You know, I have used the example of, I want to give the Muslims around the world the benefit of the doubt that this is a radical faction of Islamists that have twisted the faith in their book. And people will send me quotes from the Quran all the time, and I don't want to get into a religious argument with people, but I taught an adult Bible study class at a Baptist church for 10 years. There's a group called the Westboro Baptist Church. That's nothing like anything I've ever been taught, nothing I ever taught. That's not the book I read from. I don't read from a book that tells me that God hates gay people so much that he's allowing Americans to die in battle. And so I'm going to go hold a sign disparaging gay people and terrorizing families that are just trying to bury a Marine or a soldier that was killed in combat for religious purposes. I can't find anywhere in the book I read that would make that the right thing to do. So if we have it in America to a much lesser degree, because the Westboro Baptist Church hasn't murdered anybody, I just completely disagree with their theology. If they can claim to have the authority to do what they do from the same book that I believe is the Word of God, then why isn't it possible that these Islamists are doing the same thing with the Quran? And it's worth pointing out what animals these people are. That they're taking their faith, twisting it in a way that during the holiest of months for them, killing other Muslims is God's answer. And that's what they're doing. Coming up in just a few moments, a study suggests that if you're hearing that the Democrats are going to sweep into Congress and take over, well, there's a new Pew Research poll out there saying that they could be in a lot of trouble next year. We'll talk about that study and more on Orlando. Stick around.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
All right, thanks for being here. This is the Glenn Beck Program. Once again in Orlando this morning, this is kind of the national story everybody's covering right now. In Orlando, there was a disgruntled former employee of a company at a warehouse district in Orlando, Florida, that went and for whatever reason began to shot 5 people at that place of business. How many of them were targeted people he was after? Or were they just because they worked there and he was a disgruntled employee? Shot 5 people and then turned the gun on himself. The sheriff made a couple of comments. One is they don't believe that this has anything to do with a subversive group. This was an individual act by a disgruntled employee. It was very important in the Orlando area. 1 week from now, the anniversary of the Pulse nightclub shooting. So it is it's one of those situations. As it moves, we're going to find out, I'm sure, in the coming hours. And I'm kind of looking around for monitors to see if we can find out who he is. When we get a name of who the shooter is, we start hearing about who the victims are. We'll get more of a story of how this possibly could have happened and why. And sometimes it's morbid curiosity for some, but others it's just an answer to how somebody gets there. It seems odd to most people the ability to take a human life like that. I mean, to be just angry enough to just indiscriminately start to kill people. It seems so odd. We'll get an update as we move forward. A new study suggests that the Democrats could be in big trouble in 2018. This is a Pew Research study. And the reason why I mention this, if you watch most of the news networks or listen to anybody on cable news or entertainment, 90% of the country hates what's going on. They believe that it's what's called the Trump effect is going to be a huge overturn of seats in the House of Representatives in 2018, and that the Senate is almost certain to flip to Democrat control because people are afraid of the policies and the agenda of the Trump administration. Therefore, they are going to counteract that by electing Democrats in landslides all over, which if you watch, you would think that was going to be the case. Although the real studies that have been done show that most of the people that voted for President Trump wouldn't change their vote, that they're happy with how their vote was. And other people are figuring out that they're not as upset as the media is, that they're not getting an accurate report from the media as to what really is going on. So here is what the study is showing. It says that voters in key voting demographics were more likely to remain loyal to the Republican Party than those who identified as Democrats were. In this new study from December of 2015 to March of 2017, voters in these demographics were going to stay loyal to Republicans. In May 17th, 86% of Americans in the 50 to 64 demographic continuously identified themselves as Republicans from December 15th to March of 2017. So, 86% is high. Only 72% of Democrats in the same demographic continuously remained loyal to the party. So 10% of Democrats aged 50 to 64 stopped identifying as part of the Democratic Party at some point but returned, while 14% switched to Republican and did not return. This showed nearly identical results for Democrats and Republicans in the 30 to 49-year-old demographics and the 65-year-old and older demographics. So the people that vote, more people that were Republican are remaining loyal. It isn't the shameful thing that people think it is. And more people that identify as Democrat are not as loyal. And I think there's a lot of reason for this. Let's start with Perez, the new head of the DNC, was supposed to be a new chapter in the Democratic Party. He was supposed to be a unifier of Democrats across the country. The party platform, that for the working person, and was supposed to be that for the middle class, fighting for the middle class Americans and the working class Americans, that's what this party was going to be the champion of. And if anyone has ever seen 3 minutes of a speech he's given, is there anything unifying about what he does? He's as angry as anybody that's ever been in charge of that party. He is vitriolic, using bad language. And I don't have an aversion to language. Bad language doesn't bother me. It doesn't. I don't have. But when you're speaking in a public forum, for effect like that, to get up and start using bad language, and screaming and yelling into the microphone, it's just pure anger. And what's funny is during the election cycle, that's exactly what they said about the content of Trump rallies, where the people inside the rallies were these angriest of Americans, and Trump is playing upon the anger of people. And there was a little bit of truth to some of that there were angry people. But this is leadership. You never saw anybody at a rally like that for a Republican candidate or the Republican Party leadership. And I had a lot of disagreements with Republican leadership, but there was nobody in Republican leadership screaming foul language from the podium on a consistent basis and screaming people to, getting people riled up. So you're going to get the angry people that are already angry, but people that are just in their homes that agree with your policies. And the differences between conservative policies and liberal policies are as simple as government involvement. Those that believe that we should be more dependent on the government in some regards, that the government should be in charge of charity, the government should be in charge of those of making sure people are cared for, where people like me would say, I care just as much about charity and people being cared for as you do. Widows and orphans, as the Bible says, I care more as much about that as anyone else. I just know the government's not capable. And I know that the private citizens are, nonprofit groups are. There are good people. Are there bad people in nonprofits? Sure. Who do you trust? Who do you trust? Do you trust the government to handle that part of our lives? And that's the differences between the two parties. But what you end up having is a person that goes out and says that repealing Obamacare, now it's called Trump Care, that Americans are going to die. That was said by Chuck Schumer. I believe de Blasio said it, the mayor of New York. Many prominent Democrats are saying people are going to die. No, no, they're not. As a matter of fact, Obamacare isn't health care coverage for anyone. And nobody really has coverage except for the very ill that it would cost them more. And there are very few of those. The idea of getting Americans affordable access to affordable health care is the goal for everyone. Obamacare didn't work. It was an abysmal failure. It is imploding. Some people are seeing 140% increase in their premiums. Their deductibles are through the roof for a family of four. You know, it's $14,000 before anything kicks in your insurance. You add that to premiums and they're spending $30,000 out of pocket every year before one penny of insurance kicks in. All of the major carriers are fleeing from the marketplace. And yet the argument isn't whether or not we're going to fix it. The argument is whether or not Republicans care about people getting health care at all. People are going to die because of the repeal and replace. That's why they're not winning. That people just aren't going to rally around this kind of rhetoric. They don't want to hear hate. They don't want to hear anger. What they want to hear is peace. They want to hear you've got a better plan. Tell us what the plan is. There are plenty of Americans with zero loyalty to the Republican Party that would listen to a Democrat that spoke. Bill Clinton is still an immensely popular president, even though he did what he did in the White House with Monica Lewinsky and his missteps and everything else he did, still remains immensely popular because he was able to speak to people, whether you agree with his policies or not. And so until somebody, and ask yourself, who are the leaders in the Democratic Party right now? Does anybody like Chuck Schumer? The answer is no. Nancy Pelosi, does anybody outside of her district like her or trust her? No. Especially lately, she can't seem to construct a sentence. And I don't know what's wrong, but it's different than she was, you know, 10 years ago, 8 years ago. Hillary Clinton, is she the leader of that party? The word association game when asked about Hillary Clinton before the email leaks came out, before any of that was acknowledged, the word association game with Hillary Clinton, it was the version of the word liar, untrustworthy. Nobody believed her. Is she the leader of that party? Bernie Sanders isn't even a Democrat. He's a socialist. He left the party as soon as the election was over. So who do they have? Joe Biden? He says he might run, but he's retired. He's 80 or will be. So who do they have coming forward that's got a reasonable voice that says this is what we should be doing for the working Americans in a peaceful way? This is a better option on how to fix Obamacare instead of repeal and replace. There's plenty of people that would listen to that story, that argument. They're not saying it. It's scream and yell. Donald Trump's going to kill us. Getting out of the Paris Accord, we're going to die and the world's on fire and the oceans are going to rise repeal and replace is going to kill people. It's just one piece of hateful rhetoric after another. And I don't think people respond. So this poll does not surprise me. It surprises a lot of people. It really doesn't surprise me that much. One more thing I'd like to talk about before we get out of here today. And if we get some more information on Orlando, I will bring that to you. But I saw a story in Los Angeles, California, that 75, and not just Los Angeles, all of California, that 75% of school-age boys that are black, African-American men, are not reading at state level. 75%. Do we know what the education cost is in California, and what is the cost of not educating people? If 75% of any demographic is not meeting the reading standard, we are leaving a generation behind. What are we going to look like in 10 years? So we'll address this story before we get out of here. More on Orlando if we can get that information in here. My name is Mike Broomhead, and this is the Glenn Beck Program.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hey, thanks for being here. My name is Mike Broomhead, in for Glenn for a few more minutes today. I'll be in tomorrow and Wednesday as well. No more update on Orlando. No names have been released yet. Same situation as before. If you're just jumping in, five people killed in Orlando, Florida, and then the gunman turned the gun on himself. So a total of six people down at a business. Disgruntled worker. They're saying that it doesn't seem to be any subversive groups. It seems to be a disgruntled former employee that went on a murder spree. So it's heartbreaking for the families that are going to be notified today. And I'm sure that's why no names have been released, not even the name of this business yet, because the next of kin probably haven't all been notified for the families. So that, you know, keep it locked. I'm sure throughout the day you're going to hear more information on this. I saw a story about education, and I've been very fortunate. I learned so much as a young person. I learned to read and to write very well when I was young, and I was a horrible high school student. And one of my high school buddies was posting online today that I was in doing this show, which shocks everybody that I would even live long enough to do this. But I was a terrible student, but I was fairly intelligent. I can construct a sentence. I spell fairly well. And all of that happened when I was very young. And if we are not educating people at a young age on how to read and to write, we are so consumed with churning out good citizens, with this politically correct, anti-bullying, all these other anti-isms campaigns in schools, that we're not creating people that are critical thinkers. If you teach someone to read and to write and to comprehend what they're reading, they will figure it out. You create a critical thinker and how to reason and how to question authority and how to question the status quo. You teach people to do that, they'll change the world. We're teaching people how to be in lockstep with whatever the agenda is. Whether you agree with the agenda or not, it doesn't matter. We're not creating critical thinkers. And this story, three out of four African-American boys in California classrooms failed to meet reading and writing standards on the most recent round of testing. 75%. Three out of every four. What are we doing? Now, there's responsibility on the parents. Ultimately, it's a parent's job to make sure their child has an education. If my kids couldn't read and write, I would have known it very early. And most parents would. How in the world do you have an education system in place that leaves 75% of any group behind? And then what happens 10 years from now? If a kid can't read at a third grade level in the third grade, how do they ever learn everything to get into high school? How do they ever get out of high school and comprehend anything they have to know in order to be successful in college? Are you preparing anybody for the workforce if they can't read and write? I believe there's an underserved part of our population, and that's the kids that won't go on to college when leaving high school, but want to go into the workforce. I was fortunate enough to get a trade right out of high school. So I was very blessed. I became an electrician, and it served me most of my adult life. I made a living. I made a living at the same kind of money or more that my friends that had college educations would, because I had a trade. I learned a skill. But if I hadn't had the basics in reading and writing and math, if I didn't know a little bit of algebra, everything in the electrical field is an algebraic formula, I would have been sunk. If we leave 75% of any demographic behind, we are doomed. California is expensive for schools. Their education budget is through the roof. How are they leaving 75% behind? And if you are listening and you're a parent of any one of those students, do you know if your child is the one in four or the three out of four? And what can be done about it? How do you turn it around with them? Where do they go to school? What jobs do they do? We are throwing them to the wolves when they have the possibility of an education right in front of them. It's sad. All right, I appreciate the time as always here. If you're a social media user on Twitter, I am at Broomhead Show on Twitter. I love the interaction. If you want to tweet me there, I'll be back tomorrow morning to do the show again. And on Wednesday, it's always a pleasure to be in on this program. So I appreciate you joining me for the time that I've had to be here. Until tomorrow, God bless.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.